Red Business with Jonathan Healy.
Hi there, and thanks very much for joining us. On this episode, we're going to talk about pumpkins and we're going to talk about jazz. And if that wasn't good enough, we're going to talk about jam as well. Because to begin, from humble beginnings to a fruitful operation with a jam-packed awards cabinet, you'll see where I'm going in just a moment, Vallon's success continues to grow. And the company believes that branding has a lot to do with it. Fresh from a successful night at the recent Blasna Héireann Awards, they scooped 11 gongs. Micheál O'Linnard and Laura Hewson, how are you doing, guys? Lovely to talk to you both.
Hi, Jonathan.
Thanks for having us.
Fantastic on to win so many awards, 11 in total, Micheál. You must have been extremely proud on the night.
It was great altogether, yes. So it was from 18 shortlisted products, we won 11 awards across a distribution across silver and bronze and one gold, which we're very proud of altogether.
Now, I'm very familiar with your product because I see it on the shelf the whole time. It's often in my fridge. So, Vallon, how long are you on the go? What was the genesis of the company? What led you to produce jam?
Yeah, we're 40 years on the go next year. So it was started in the Gaeltacht in 1983 by my mother and a good friend of hers, Enna, when they were made redundant from a local honey business at the time. And I suppose they took their learnings from that business and tried to put something else into a jar, if you understand my meaning. So that's where Vallon started. And I suppose the Gaeltacht genesis is born in the name, Vallon meaning wholesome, good, clean food. So from there, we're here today with every number of preserves and luckily winning awards.
I have to say that it's a very difficult mantle for you to take up. Your mum, Maureen, sounds like a real pioneer, setting up a business after she was made redundant in the 80s. There's lots of people who weren't that brave. And then you come along and you
Absolutely.
Have to kind of grow the business and keep up that spirit. That's a hard ask.
That's it. And she had one child at the time. I could only imagine the difficulty. But you can, I suppose she often says that companies which are born in recessions can survive recessions. But you can imagine that back in 1983, two rural women trying to start a business, which was a little bit left field, let's say making preserves, was a difficult task by all means, particularly when she has many anecdotes about, let's say, not being able to take out a loan. Or
I was going to say the bank manager, he'd want to have been a huge fan of honey to invest at that stage.
Yeah. That's precisely it, yeah. And like you'd need your husband to co-sign things. And at that point, my father, Pather, he wasn't in the business yet. He would come in later years and become a salesman and a very successful one at that, known for generally his Irish language, which he kind of sweet-talked people with.
I love the way that you, very similar to the lads over at Ballymaloe Foods, you started with the markets and mm-hmm. the sides of the road. Do you have fond memories yourself of being, I'm going to say, dragged along to these markets as a child? Or did you actually enjoy the sales part?
Well, Jonathan, I'll tell you, you had just been mentioning blackberry jam there yourself, that you're kind of an amateur blackberry jam maker. And I'll tell you, my first job was picking blackberries. So they sent us out. They sent all the kids out picking blackberries. So a cheap source of labor is what I'd say that was. But yes, I do have fond memories of particularly traveling around the country with my dad while he was doing sales calls. Because although when I was born, we may have had listings in some retailers, my dad would go around and service the small independent retailers, which is how we kind of got almost a nationwide distribution. And that was a very, I suppose you'd say, it was a unique experience spending that much time with your dad while he's at work, if you understand my meaning.
Yeah, and I mean, if you didn't like jam, you were kind of goosed. I mean, I'm presuming that you liked the product more than anything else.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we grew up in a house that very much valued good food, and I think that gave me certainly a good foundation to work in Vallon today. And a lot of the work I do here today, barring the day-to-day, would be recipe design, things like that. So it's something I very much enjoy doing.
Okay, let's bring in Laura Hewson. Laura, you're involved, as I said, on the marketing side of the business. It's competitive because if you go and look at the standard shelf and they have all their planograms set out and you have to exist alongside all of the others. Branding is really important. So how did you go about making sure that your product stood out compared to all the own brand stuff that's there and all the more established brands that were there?
Exactly that, because when I started, I think 13, 14 years ago, where the business was that the quality of the product was there, the recipes, all the fundamentals, and the business had grown over the years. So I suppose the next part of the question is what, how do we communicate that we're just as good as what people were buying at the time, which was imported brands? They were market leaders. So a lot of the jam and marmalade that people were buying 10, 15 years ago was imported brands. So the question was, why aren't they buying ours? It was branding was the answer. We weren't branding ourselves correctly. And we've since learned then the importance of it. And what we did from the get-go was invested a lot into consumer insight and research to understand why certain brands are working and not in our category jam, let's say jam and marmalade. And when we found out the reason to that, it was very clear that we needed to communicate on our pack through distinctive packaging what we were about and what the product was.
Can I give you the simpleton's approach to why we love your products? It's the
Yeah.
lids, right?
You
The
see,
products themselves are
yes.
lovely when you get to it, but
Yeah,
what attracted
get
to
to
us
it.
first was the idea that you had this lovely lid. It was like something that your grandmother had kind of done and stuck a little bit of muslin cloth over the top of it. I'm presuming that I
If
fell
we had
into your
spoken to
trap.
you now 10, 15 years ago, we wouldn't have needed to do the consumer insight, because exactly that, it was as simple as that. Unique packaging that attracts people when they're buying. And in this case, for jam and marmalade, the nostalgic feel around going to a jam shelf and wanting something that reminds you of your grandmother. It was, Jonathan, you've actually just
Oh,
hit the
there you
nail on the
go.
head.
Can I just want to get
So
a pay rise for Laura
you
Michal?
could
She did
have
it
gone
right.
for a job here. It was very simple. It was all the emotions that are evoked when shopping jam and wanting something that reminds you of when you homemade jam. And we knew that the product was there, so we had to design this packaging that reflect that. So my advice would be to get designers and people who can work on your pack to really understand what's going to be eye-catching. And in our case, it was this lid. It was simple packaging, a unique type of jar, and all of that came together. And then what we had was the product and the brand. And then that was the story then over the last, the growth over the last couple of years, which has been phenomenal, and we're very proud of
So you obviously you've moved on from selling it out of the boot at the side of the road. So where can people see the products now?
Everywhere. So we've got nationwide distribution with all the big retailers, and then obviously we have, and I suppose this has kind of been the innovation over the last couple of years, because that's also been important, where we brought out different flavors, more premium varieties that are available then in independent shops. So we've got a really, really broad distribution, both in multiple retails and then independents. Which, owner operated, more premium, where we would do unusual products. So, yeah, that's.
Okay, so in other words, the machine keeps going. Michal, you better stay in that kitchen and start producing more product. I mean, is there a lot
Well,
of?
that's it, Jonathan. It's innovation, innovation
It is
now. That's
innovation,
now
and
that we have the brand, when you set up the foundations, the brand, now we need to look at the next 5 years and kind of understand where the consumer is going to be
yeah.
over the next 5 years.
And God knows where that will be. I'm looking at the website now, Michal. I see you've got a Christmas spiced marmalade. So you do seasonal things as well. I presume it's a very seasonal business because berries are good at certain times. You don't necessarily want to import stuff if you can grow it yourself.
You're certainly right, and mentioning the blackberry again, people often say that they can taste when it's blackberry season from the jam because we get a lot of local pickers bringing blackberries to us, and I suppose that makes a difference to the flavor, if you understand my meaning. But yes, it is seasonal. We have an array of products that are appropriate to Christmas, and we have a special new product coming out in the next few weeks, actually, for Christmas, which I will let you know as the first to know,
Well,
is a
go on.
cream liqueur caramel. So we're very excited about that.
Right, and what do I do with that then?
Well, you eat it straight out of jar and eat it immediately, so you can buy another one.
You see, straight away, I now want to try that without even
Yes.
knowing.
Well,
What?
I'll expand on that. On pavlova, desserts, your coffee, your
Yes.
Christmas coffee, there's, yeah,
Oh, sorry. Actually,
there's lots.
I could drizzle it over my pavlova for the Christmas. They
Exactly.
see now.
That's
I'm
precisely it,
straight
yeah.
in, lads. I mean, you don't. You're pushing an open door. I give you that much. It's available in Supervalues. It's available right around the country. You've got a wonderful website as well, Fáilein.ie.
Thank you very much.
It's a wonderful story, lads. We wish you every success
Thank
with it.
you.
Micheál Aonaird and Laura Hewson. Thanks so much for joining us on Red Business.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, we'll get to the jazz in a minute, because that always coincides with Halloween, which, as we know, is the spookiest time of the year. And we're not talking about the things that scare us, like electricity bills or putting the heating on. It is, of course, Halloween itself. One trend that's really caught on is pumpkin picking. I've never done it because I didn't know it was a thing. But Sandra Burns from Joe's Farm Crisps in Killa in East Cork, you've been very busy. And in fact, you've been getting pumpkins ready for people to come down and pick, have you?
Yes, we are very busy. We started pumpkin picking on our farm 5 years ago. It was originally started basically to show people and kids in particular to do school tours where your food comes from, basically that is not from a supermarket shelf. So it's like it's a very hands-on experience. You get to pick different vegetables around the farm, and at the end you get to pick your pumpkin. I suppose the draw for us is the pumpkin, but the most important thing leaving for us is the bag of veg that people might get to experience and eat different, like rainbow carrots this year, different colours and varieties of carrots that they may not normally experience or taste.
Okay, so in other words, they go home with the stuff they've pulled out of the ground themselves.
Yes.
Okay.
The whole reason behind it is that if a kid is involved in like picking, as we call it, dirty carrots straight from the ground, that they will be more inclined to maybe try it. They mightn't even like it, but want to go home. That's a huge step for us.
Yeah, okay, I can see the logic behind that. One of the things that I find fascinating is that we grow pumpkins in Ireland. I presumed that we wouldn't have had the climate for them. How easy are they to grow here?
They're a bit tricky. Well, if you get it right, it's great. You need, like, they start off in tunnels. We get company in Burr to propagate for us. And then we transplant them out the first week of June. So they're tiny little seeds, little transplants that we get. And we transplant them out the first week of June. So ideally then you need a little bit of rain to get them going, to get them propagating. And then you need a lot of heat. You need the summers that we've had, the last few summers has been ideal, really.
Now, Sandra, can I tell you something? Yeah, we had a lovely warm summer, but yeah, we've had an awful lot of rain in the last couple of weeks. Has that impacted upon the pumpkin growth phase, if I could put it that way?
The pumpkins will be kind of ready kind of mid-September for us. So ideally, the rain that we've been getting, particularly kind of since last Sunday, kind of all most of October, really, they would start rotting the pumpkins. Mm-hmm. If we had 2 months of that, the pumpkins would start rotting. So I suppose it has been good. The weather has been good and ideal all along. You want it to kind of stay dry and not too hot, because your pumpkins are finished growing in September. But just once it's dry, pumpkins will last. It's just this weather, unfortunately, like in particular this week now, we've seen a lot of decay, but like anything, Joe, it's kind of coming to the end.
Well, we're nearly there. We'll be carving them next week, so you're at that point. Put out the child to Prague. Yeah. That seems to be the universal solution in Ireland.
It's out.
Very good.
Out this week.
And did you break the head off the child to Prague, which I always think is a cruel practice in some parts of the country? Or
broken off the time we got married, so okay. It's still off.
Tell us what else. You also produce crisps down there on Joe's farm. Tell us about them.
We do. We're over 8.5 years producing vegetable crisps, beetroot crisps, and different coloured mixed potato crisps. So it was like we've been vegetable farming with years. We originally did farmers markets in Cork for 13 years. And 8.5 years ago, between price wars with supermarkets selling veg at 5 cents, we knew we had to change and diversify the way we were running our vegetable business. So we had, Joe and myself, 20 years ago, this time of the year, we went over to Joe's sister in Boston and we went pumpkin picking, apple picking, and we saw vegetables, crisps. We loved the whole experience. Never in our wildest dreams did we ever think that we'd end up doing all of them. But here we are.
And you have to change and diversify. Absolutely.
And
still going strong. And how do people respond to the parsnip crisps? Because the automatic assumption is that it'd be an old spud or two that you'd be eating with your pint or your lunch.
Yeah, we got great reaction. I suppose we were we're the first company that ever grew and produced vegetable crisps on a farm. So like we were always growing carrots, beetroot and parsnips. So it was the natural thing to go into veg crisps. Everyone thought we were mad, but they probably still do. But we knew in our hearts that it would work. It took a while for Joe to convert people, especially beetroot people, I suppose, were used to pickled beetroot in a jar. And when they were tasting the crisps, then they were getting the sweetness of the natural beetroot that comes through, and they couldn't get over that taste. So, like you get the taste of the parsnip, the sweetness of the carrot. It's going great. This year has been brilliant for us in that we've got into a lot of 5-star hotels that are using them as welcome packs in their bedrooms and also garnishing sandwiches. So that's kind of a new direction that we're going down, which is brilliant for us. It's kind of a consistent thing. We're in a lot of independent stores. We're in SuperValu. That's what started. It has been all word of mouth, which has been brilliant.
That's fantastic. And it's very similar to the last story that we were just talking about in Fallon and their experience in a different side, but the jam side, whereas you're doing it on the crisp side. The old pumpkin picking is very popular. I think it's sold out already. So when are you going to have the hordes descending upon you to pick the pumpkins?
We started the 8th of October, so it's just Saturday and Sundays this year because the way the midterm is falling the first week of November. So we're on to our third weekend. This is our busiest weekend. The closer you get to Halloween, the busier it gets. So it's all hands on deck.
And they all go home. They go home with their big pumpkin.
Where's Wellies is the main thing coming to the farm.
Yes, the notice has got out. Sandra, it's a fantastic story. What's the website if people want to look you up?
It's joesfarmcrisps.ie.
joesfarmcrisps.ie, down in Killa in East Cork. Sandra Burns, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks very much.
The Guinness Cork Jazz Festival is back with a swinging bang. It begins on the bank holiday weekend, bringing live music to the streets of Cork as well as venues all over the city, including the original home of the jazz 44 festivals ago, the Metropole Hotel. Roger Russell, General Manager of the Met. How you doing, Roger?
I'm doing great, Jonathan. How are you today?
I'm very well. Now, you had a slightly slimmed down version of it last year, so you had some people through the door, but not as many as you liked. Have you got a bigger event planned this year?
Oh, we do. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. As you say, last year was very different, and we did have to slim it down because of COVID and the restrictions. But thankfully, those restrictions are no longer in place. So we're looking forward to a really, really busy jazz festival again this year. And it's going to be great. It's going to be great to get back to the numbers that we would have seen in the past. And it's such a huge event for Cork and the lift that it gives to all the businesses, the local economy, and even the atmosphere in the street. It's a real party atmosphere, carnival atmosphere, and it's great to see so many people out and about.
Now, the thing about the Metropole is it's such a big venue that you've got loads of little bits and pieces going on. You've got the main bar, you've got the lobby, you've got the rooms upstairs, you've got the small little nooks and crannies where people will gather as well. So what are you looking forward to most?
Having the people in the hotel for the jazz festival, the buzz, the atmosphere. We've got some great bands lined up. We have the Swing Cats are back again this year. We have Judith Owen coming in from the UK and Pixie and the Gypsies. We have the great local jazz musicians like Gary Bowes and the Motones. Harry Connolly will be with us again. The underscore orchestra will be with us. So there's going to be some really, really great music over the weekend. So, it's going to be really good. Looking forward to it.
I mean, there's over 1,000 musicians and artists from 20 countries and 70 venues. You are but one. What is it about the Met, though, that makes it the focal point? Is it just that history, the fact that it started there?
Well, we're the festival club, and it did start here. And it's the heart of the jazz festival, and it continues to be the heart of the jazz festival. It's synonymous with jazz in Cork, and people come here because of that. So it has a lot of culture and a lot of history about the jazz, and we're very cognizant of that, and it's something that we work very hard to try and protect.
When you're doing this, though, Roger, can you get a break? I mean, is it just full on for you? Do you get to enjoy the jazz festival at all? Or are you one of these people who waits until Monday evening, then breathes out when all the jazz is finished and goes for a nice relaxing night out yourself?
The jazz is full on, but I do try to sample some of the bands. I don't really get to stay too long with a particular act, but I tend to pop in and out to each stage and just to make sure that it's going well and people are enjoying it.
So it all kicks off on the 28th. So it is the 28th of October, and then the events really just run through until the Monday.
Yeah, so it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, as you say. So our first jazz gig here in the Metropole is at 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon, and it runs all the way through. And our very last one kicks off then at 12 o'clock on Monday night. So yeah, it's all the way through here at the Metropole.
Yeah, and yeah, tickets left, are they all gone at this stage? If you're not in, you can't win, kind of thing.
There's still a few tickets going around. Absolutely. There are still one or two tickets floating around. If you go onto our website, you might get lucky.
Okay, Guinness.
And we'll always look after you, Jonathan. You're famous.
I'll rock up and knock in. I expect that now. I'll get turned away by security and it'll be hilarious. It'll be great. GuinnessCorkJazz.com is the website if you want to have a look. Roger Russell and the team at the Metropole, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and best of luck.
Thanks, Jonathan.
If you are going jazzing, do enjoy it. That is it from this episode of Red Business. Thank you so much for listening. Fiona Corcoran was the producer. Don't forget, Red Business in Focus is on the website redfm.ie, along with every episode of this podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.
Get the Red Business podcast every week with Jonathan Healy at redfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts.